From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The Florida State Legislature will consider 17 pieces of legislation regarding guns this session. Some seek to expand concealed carry onto college campuses and into airports. Others want to see limits on assault weapons and large-capacity ammunition magazines. We'll talk with lawmakers making these proposals. Plus, there's a proposed change to the Stand Your Ground law that takes the burden of proof off the person standing their ground. We'll look at how this changes the posture of a sometimes controversial law. Plus, the Dutch have been fighting the water for centuries, but now they say the engineering marvels of the Netherlands aren't enough. We talk with a Dutch environmental biologist about how the Dutch are building with nature to solve their water problems and how it has implications for South Florida. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. What could Florida's water situation possibly have in common with the Netherlands? We'll talk with a Dutch ecologist who says quite a lot, really. That story a little later in the show. But first, no legislative session would be complete without widely disparate pieces of legislation on guns. And so far this year, there are 17 that will be considered by Florida's legislature. Today, we're looking at some of the more impactful and controversial bills our senators and representatives will eventually vote on. First, guns on campus. Representative Scott Plakon will talk with us about his House Bill 6005, which amends current legislation to allow concealed carry permit holders to take their guns onto college campuses. Next, guns in the airport. Representative Jay Fant will talk about House Bill 6001, which he co-introduced. It seeks to amend that same piece of legislation to allow concealed carry permit holders take their guns into the passenger terminal of airports. Then on the flip side, Senator Linda Stewart and Senator Gary Farmer will talk about Senate Bill 254, which wants to ban the sale or possession of assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines. We'll also take a look at proposed changes to the Stand Your Ground bill with reporter Sasha Cordner, who's been covering that story for NPR. We're talking about gun legislation. Do you have a question or a comment? You can share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Representative Plakon, let's start with you. You're sponsoring a bill in the House that would revise where people can and cannot take an openly carried handgun or a concealed carry firearm. To begin with, for those who aren't familiar with the concealed carry permit, what's involved in the process of getting one?
Well, thanks for having me on. There's a course you take that requires training, and it's done all around the state. And also, it requires, I believe, one shot to be made as well. So the instructor has to have some form of competence that that they know how to use a firearm. And as a result, permit holders in the state are a very safe bunch. Their crime rate is actually about a sixth of even law enforcement officers. So we're talking about a responsible group of people here.
Oh, so there's information saying that the people that have concealed carry permits tend to not be committing crimes.
Right.
Statistically.
Statistically, that's correct.
All right. Well, Florida has 1.6 million concealed carry permits, and laws already stipulate certain places where people with those permits and concealed weapons cannot go. Your proposal would revise those limitations to allow for concealed carry as well as open carry of firearm on college campus. What's motivating you to put this bill forward?
Well, first, I need to correct you. It would be only concealed weapon
only
on
concealed
college campuses. That's correct. And, back in 2008 when I ran for office the first time, I sat on the House floor last year. I had kind of mixed feelings about that, but a bunch of things have changed. First of all, I've heard House and Senate testimony for years, and each time I hear it, I become more convinced this is the right thing to do. But in 2014, I was at my office, my publishing company, one day, and I got the following text message. I'm in a code red at school. I'm so scared, Daddy. And my daughter went on to say, I can't talk, Dad. The whole school's on lockdown. Everyone is screaming in the cafeteria. A lot of cops are speeding to the school. And I responded, I'm headed in there now and praying. And she said, you can't come here, Daddy. Won't be allowed anywhere near the campus. There was a shooting, Daddy. I'm so scared. I can't stop crying. We're in my classroom with all the lights turned off and huddled together. I got to the school. I saw helicopters overhead, dozens of emergency vehicles with their lights on, and probably a couple hundred parents with their faces pressed against the chain link fence, like we've seen in so many of these gun-free zones, with the parents helplessly looking on. Thankfully, it turned out to be a hoax. But first, I think it was 37 minutes, I believe, that my daughter was locked in a gun-free zone with a shooter on the loose. Then I've sat on the criminal justice and full judicial committees the last 2 years, and every time I hear the arguments, I become more convinced it's the right thing to do. And I would just finish by saying, you know, we're all born with Second Amendment rights in this country. To take those rights from someone, there has to be, I think, a compelling fact-based reason. And we've taken the rights, by law, from people on college campuses. So we're just trying to restore those rights that everybody was born with.
I mean, obviously it's an emotional moment when you get a text like that from your daughter, and they're scared. But do you think having a gun on campus would have helped that particular situation?
Well, again, that was a hoax. And
could the presence of guns cause that hoax to maybe escalate?
Well, okay, let's talk about a real-life situation where a shooter in many of these schools and the movie theaters and other places, even the airport recently in South Florida, had there been some concealed weapon permit holders in these places, you would have at least had the chance of minimizing the killings that took place. And here's the thing, you know, I'm sure we'll talk on the show about people want to ban guns and take guns and limit guns in many different ways, but I start from the position the bad guys will always get the gun that they want. We can't pass enough laws to stop bad guys from getting guns. The question is, will the good guys at least have the opportunity to defend, you know, their life and freedom and maybe people around them? Again, it's no guarantee that it would, but again, I'll go back. We are born with these rights, and one of those is the right to defend ourselves. So to take that from us should be a very well-considered thing, and it should be really kind of a rare thing. That's why we're looking at some of these gun-free zones where all these killings seem to happen, be taking place.
Well, when we talk about weapons on campus, a lot of people think about the November 2014 shooting on FSU campus in Tallahassee. A student opened fire at the campus library around midnight, hurting three people. In the end, it was the campus notification system that quickly brought police to the scene, and it was police officers who ultimately shot and killed that gunman. Obviously, this isn't the only shooting on a college campus, but does this show that perhaps armed law enforcement and campus alert systems are up to the task?
Well, you're talking about one example at one university. If you look at many of these other gun-free zones, killings went on. The University of Virginia, over 30 people were killed. So, again, it comes down to why shouldn't – I guess I would ask the question, why shouldn't people that are mainly – you know, it's over 21 years old. So you're talking about seniors, graduate students, faculty, administration that would be able to respond. So the question is, I would say, is why shouldn't we – if you look around the country, many states have had this for many years. There are almost no examples of any problem this has caused. I was able to identify four accidental discharges. This is with 31 states have some form of campus carry. Four accidental discharges. One of them was a professor, I think in Colorado, that literally shot himself in the foot in more ways than one because he's famous now. But no deaths. So the people that are opposing this, I just have not heard the facts of why this is a problem. I've heard a lot of things like we're afraid of guns and, you know, and it'll make the students nervous and all that kind of stuff. But looking at the facts, I don't see where this is a problem. So therefore, we should restore the Second Amendment rights on these campuses.
You mentioned an age of 21. Tell me about that age that you just mentioned, because I know kids go to school at the age of 18.
Well, right. To be a concealed weapon permit holder, you have to be 21 years old.
Okay. I did not know that.
Most of the time you're talking about seniors and graduate students. And if nothing else, this would give the opportunity for professors, some of them, to respond in the event of a mass shooter.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, too, though. The bill would allow people with concealed carry permits to carry a concealed weapon on campus. That you say that this bill doesn't say anything about open carry?
That's correct.
Okay.
The way that it's worded, you have to look at the way the statute, it's concealed weapon. There's been some confusion on that, but this is only concealed weapon.
Yeah, it confused me, obviously, because I was looking at it, and it seems like it takes out certain pieces of language. and it removes the provision for concealed carry licenses from open carrying handgun or concealed weapon and firearm onto college campuses. It's very legal.
It's only concealed weapon because open carry is it's covered in other statutes.
Okay. So,
but this would only allow concealed weapon permits on campus.
All right.
Or holders on campus.
We are talking about gun measures that are up for debate this session in the legislative processes in Florida. Do you have a question or a comment? You can share your thoughts with us at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. In late 2014, a similar bill was introduced, and we had the chief of the FGCU campus police, Chief Stephen Moore, on our show to talk to us about the idea of concealed carry of firearms on campus. I want to give a quick listen to what he had to say a couple years ago.
The chiefs from all the state university system, we meet on a regular basis, and we've these bills have come up in the past. And our belief is adding more guns on campus is not the answer to increasing safety. We believe that the proper avenue is more training for the people on campus, the faculty, staff, students, so they know how to respond in case of an emergency, a good, quick notification of law enforcement, a good, quick law enforcement response, and then the faculty, staff, and students knowing what to do. And we train our people on the get out, hide out, or take out options that you can have if a active shooter situation takes place. So we think that's a safer alternative. I don't think any of these would necessarily greatly increase the number of guns on campus, but we don't think having any more guns on campus is going to increase safety.
So Representative Plakin, how do you respond to hearing that the head of a campus police department thinks that this might not be the solution?
Well, I have great respect for all of our law enforcement officers, and of course respect their opinion and take into account. But I would agree with most of what he said, that we need better safety training and campuses and other places. Another thing that I noticed he said at the end of that is it wouldn't increase guns very much on campus. And I actually ran the math last year. I don't recall the statistics, but if you look at the number of concealed weapon permit holders in Florida that are 21 to, you say, 23 years old, you know, the younger ones, you're probably talking about a campus like the size of UCF of maybe a few dozen students at any given time. So it's not as big of an impact as some people might believe. But it comes, again, I know I sound like a broken record. We're born with Second Amendment rights, and I don't think those should be removed unless there's a darn good reason. And if you look at what's going across the country, I don't see very many darn good reasons, other than opinions, of course, and I respect their opinion. But let's look at the facts. This is being done in 31 other states in some form, and there's no problem. So why should we take the Second Amendment, keep people from their Second Amendment rights? I don't see a reason for the life of me.
And speaking of these students, what do the students that you converse with have to say about this bill? There have been some organized groups at FSU and right here at FGCU advocating for open carry or concealed carry on campus. What thoughts have you heard when it comes to the college students?
Well, I really, strangely enough, hadn't had that much output from college students. I actually filed this bill, quite frankly, without speaking to, you know, one of the news outlets said, you know, you're a tool of Marion Hammer and you guys work this out with the NRA. I never even spoke to her before filing it. In fact, I didn't speak to anyone. It's based on my experience of being on the Criminal Justice Subcommittee over the last 2 years and the full Judicial Care Committee over the last 2 years, hearing the testimony and people coming up from all over the state four times over and over and over. And literally every time I hear it, I become more convinced in looking at the facts that this is the right thing to do, to allow Floridians and Americans to protect themselves and not have to completely depend on government to protect them.
This bill's come before the Florida lawmakers before in the past, and it hasn't passed. Is there a difference this year that you see about the bill or the makeup of the legislature that'll make it possibly pass?
Well, I think there could be a big difference. In the House, it passed last year. And Senator Diaz de la Portilla was a Senate Judiciary Chairman who refused to hear it last year. Strangely enough, Senator Stube, just elected to the Senate, was the sponsor of this bill last year, and he is that chairmanship. So I suspect that the bill will at least be heard in the Senate. And my opinion is I think its chances look pretty decent on the Senate floor, just looking at some of the senators over there.
All right. We did reach out to Stubbe, and he declined to be on our show today, just so you know. I want to turn now to another bill that focuses on where concealed carry weapons are permitted in Florida. Representative Jay Fant, thank you for joining us today. I know you're not feeling well, and I really appreciate you giving us your time on this discussion.
Very kind. Thank you.
You have co-introduced a bill that would revise the concealed carry permit, the same statute that we're talking about, when it comes to airports. What exactly are you proposing with that change?
In current law, airports, you are prohibited from bringing your permitted concealed carry into the airport. For instance, you can't go through the metal detector. You can't go into the baggage claim area. And so that's the difference between what we call the sterile area of the airport, everything past the metal detectors, and then what we call the terminal area. These days, with much of the public sentiment being in favor of having the privilege to defend oneself, there is enough of a movement and a feel that the right to defend oneself should include the terminal area. Not the area past the metal detectors, of course. That's not part of what this law would this bill would put into law. But if you were in the baggage claim area, for instance, or in the area where the tragedy at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood occurred, and you are permitted to carry your concealed weapon, you would be a privilege to defend yourself if that circumstance arose.
So this bill was filed back in November, and now we're talking about less than a couple weeks from that shooting at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. Ended up killing 5 people, injured 6 more. Does that shooting change your thoughts on having filed this bill?
I can tell you that it put a chill into my heart to read the news, knowing that prior to those circumstances that Representative Rayburn and others, including myself, have sponsored and co-sponsored that legislation. I can envision, had I been in that airport at that time and been a concealed weapon permit holder, but abiding by the law and not having my concealed sidearm with me, I would have not been able to defend myself against that shooter. And if any of the victims certainly had been concealed permit holders, they are certainly not permitted under current law to have defended themselves at that time. This bill would change that. This bill would simply allow someone under threat of life to discharge their weapon against that threat until that threat is removed. And that's something that gives security to people who, in this world that we live in, know that these threats occur more and more.
Well, when we talk about letting guns inside the passenger terminal, you're not talking about anything going past TSA. So if you get there, you're getting on a plane and you have your gun, you have to leave it like you do your pocket knife or whatever as you go through security. So people probably naturally would not be carrying them with them. And then when they get off the
air, you're likely not going to receive very kind remarks from TSA if you approach the secure area with a sidearm of any kind, concealed or not. This is
that will be a very unpleasant moment for you. Yes,
it would be more than a discussion. The passenger lobby terminal area, you could be waiting for a friend, picking up luggage, more in the more public space of things is only where this would be allowed.
So, like if you're picking somebody up and they're going to be meeting you at baggage claim,
that's correct.
Or dropping someone off upstairs, that's where you're talking about it being possible.
That is correct.
And my last question for you, Representative Fant, this bill is one of several expanding Florida's concealed carry laws. To many, it's a clear Second Amendment issue, but as we've seen in the debate about guns, there are plenty of people who do believe in restrictions on guns. My question is, do you think there are any steps we could take, including potential limits on the Second Amendment, to prevent things like the mass shootings that we've seen, not only at the Fort Lauderdale Airport, but also at Pulse Nightclub?
What I have observed over time is just observing the process, and like Representative Plake and I have also sat on the criminal justice committees and the full judiciary committee, what we have a condition of are illegal guns in all our spaces, whether we want them there or not. And making gun-free zones or gun-restricted areas do not prevent the bad guys, so to speak, from being on campus, being in the airports, looking for places to cause trouble. Those who take the time to take very seriously their Second Amendment rights and go through the state of Florida process, and who are 21 and older and go through the permitting and the training, are willing to defend themselves if needed with a firearm, would simply like to be in a position to have that privilege in acceptable places. And we believe public policy creates these acceptable places in places like the terminal of the airport.
All right. I know you don't feel very well, so I want to tell you thank you so much for joining us, even in spite of your illness, and I hope you get well.
Glad to call in. I hope to get better soon.
Yeah. Now we're going to turn to a Senate bill aimed at getting assault weapons and large-capacity ammunition magazines off the streets. The people introducing this legislation are with me on the phone now, Senator Linda Stewart of Orange County and Senator Gary Farmer from Broward County. First, Senator Stewart, can you tell me what this bill encompasses?
Well, you know, we have mentally ill people who can purchase an assault weapon legally. We have people who have been on the FBI's terrorist watch list who can buy an assault weapon legally. And one did so in my district that killed 49 people at Pulse. Just yesterday, we arrested a man who had killed a pregnant woman and an Orlando Police Department officer. He was arrested with a vest and two handguns that had a drum, which is an attachment to a weapon, but gave him 100 extra rounds. This whole idea of assault weapons comes about by this nationwide assault using these types of weapons that I'm sure the Constitution did not have these weapons to begin with. So I don't see there's any threat to being armed as a citizen, but I don't think that it is necessary to have these lethal weapons allowed for criminals and madmen who can purchase them legally. We are so much less safe having these weapons. So this is going to only take away those weapons that are considered a weapon in the hands of citizens that are really meant for the police or a military. They're not meant, in my opinion, for any citizen to have access to. It's just it is a safety precaution, and it's a gun safety issue, and those two areas right there are the reason that I put this forward. And throughout the state, we have had issues, and Senator Farmer can easily speak to some of those issues that have affected him and why he's very much in favor of this legislation.
Well, Senator Stewart and Farmer, you both represent places where two mass shooting incidents took place against civilians in public spaces. For Senator Farmer, just a couple weeks ago in Fort Lauderdale, tell me, Senator Farmer, did that incident inspire you to become part of this bill, or were you involved with it before this attack?
No, and thank you for having me on. I was very interested in this issue. In fact, it's one of the issues I campaigned on and why I ran for office. I feel we have a great need for additional gun safety legislation. In addition to proudly co-sponsoring the assault weapons ban with Senator Stewart, I am working on a bill that would end what we call the gun show loophole here in Florida, which exempts private sales of firearms from our background check laws. I've also filed a bill that would do away with loopholes in our trigger lock bill, which is a current law we have designed to ensure that loaded firearms in houses where minors are present are adequately locked or stored away from the children. And so I think there are many things we need to do in the realm of gun safety, and no one's trying to take away a constitutional right. I think it's important to talk about that. Every constitutional right is subject to reasonable restrictions, particularly those pertaining to safety. When we were children, we learned that you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater. That actually comes from a real court case that put a limitation on the right of free speech. You can't slander someone. That's another limitation on your right of free speech. And so putting aside the issue of whether we still have well-regulated militias, the right to bear arms is certainly subject to reasonable safety limitations. And I believe that the assault weapons ban that Senator Stewart and I have proposed and the other legislation that I just discussed are very reasonable restrictions and on the right to bear arms that ensure safety of society in general.
Well, you mentioned the Second Amendment, and of course, when that was written, we were dealing with much different weapons. from a historical perspective, the way that our weaponry has evolved, how do you think that that relates to the way that you feel that this amendment or this law should be evolved?
Well, I think our founding fathers would have had great pause to enacting the Second Amendment at all had they known that ultimately private citizens would be allowed to carry weapons designed for the military. You have to remember that these assault weapons that we're talking about, and the kits that can be used to modify many weapons that you can legally purchase in Florida, allow for things like rapid burst firing. These are weapons that were purely and solely designed and manufactured for military use for the killing of large numbers of human beings. They're not sportsman rifles. They were never designed to be in the hands of people who don't go through months and years of military training for accuracy, judgment, use. And so I think that the advance of these weapons and the fact that so many loopholes exist that allow them to be transferred, sold, and bought or modified in this way is a glaring loophole that we have. And if I might, I'd like to also comment. We've just talked a lot today. I've heard referenced a couple times in both the bills that the representatives have sponsored. And let me say this. I don't really know Representative Fant all that well. We have mutual friends who say very great things about him. I've known Representative Plakin for a number of years. I have great respect for both of them. But this notion that quote-unquote gun-free zones are the problem and are contributing to the increase in mass shootings is really belied by the statistics. If you look at every town for gun safety, they've done extensive research on this. And in fact, since January of 2009, at least through 2014, of the 110 incidents where a mass shooting took place, 70% took place in private residences. And of the remaining 33 incidents, only 18 of those took place in a place where concealed guns could be lawfully carried. This is a myth that is being perpetuated by the NRA and some of its, frankly, I hate to say, henchmen. There's one particular gentleman who's been debunked a number of times. In fact, he claimed in the South Carolina shooting that occurred because the church was a gun-free zone. In fact, that church, under South Carolina law, was a place where a concealed weapon, could be lawfully carried. So Dr. John Scott and his crime prevention research and this whole idea of, quote, more guns equals less crime, it's just not statistically accurate. And when you couple that with the concerns about accuracy, when you look back historically on why we did away with vigilante justice, why when the West was settled we did away with people carrying holsters and firearms, there are a host of reasons why we don't have people taking the law into their own hands. Well, look at the incident that happened in Fort Lauderdale. 80 seconds it took security to respond. 80 seconds, just like you cited the FSU shooting. Great work by our law enforcement. So they get there 80 seconds later, and now civilians have drawn their weapons and are firing on the bad guy. How is the police to know who the bad guy is? How are we to be ensured that the private citizens that decided to open fire are accurate? And they're not. In fact, we've seen time and time again where people who do that hurt civilians, innocent civilians.
Well, going
so
back,
there are a lot of problems with these concepts.
Going back again to the Second Amendment and the wording of it in order to form the militia situation, mm-hmm. Looking back to that, you're looking at a time in history when we had just undergone a revolution and put our own country together, and we were a very young country, and the weapons were obviously different then. If you're looking to form a well-regulated militia, and you're trying, that's kind of more military-ish. If you want to form a well-regulated militia without military-style guns, you're not going to get very far.
I would hope not.
Representative Plakin.
Representative Plakin, did you have something to say?
Well, yeah. First of all, to my friend, now Senator Farmer, it's good to call you that, and welcome to the legislature. And
thank you.
I heard the comments on guns on campus and so on, and gun-free zones.
But you look at all these, and I understand there's a lot of smaller mass shootings. I think it's defined as more than four. But if you look at some of the larger ones on college campuses, the movie theater in Colorado, where there were seven theaters, he picked the only one that was guns were not allowed. So I would ask the question, in the other states where firearms are allowed on campus, where is the problem? And I don't think that there is a problem. So, I would assert that if there's not a problem, people's Second Amendment rights should be restored.
Well, and I would respond to that is that we just haven't seen the problem yet. These are all relatively new enactments. In fact, only eight states legislate the absolute right to carry firearms on a campus. Most states either outlaw or leave it to the discretion of the trained education professionals and presidents that run the universities. In fact, the United Faculty of Florida has extensive studies and information on its website. They are united against guns on campuses in Florida. Our sheriff here is against open carry in the airport or in other public places. I think we need to rely on law enforcement and their just judgment and experience, and there is no when you look back and see, and I just respectfully disagree. I think a shooting of four people or five people would count as a mass shooting. I think anything more than one or two would count as a mass shooting. But when you look back and see that most did not, in fact, occur in gun-free zones, and then when you factor in all the concerns over people just making their own decision on whether to fire a gun and in what circumstances and where, I think there are just many, many historically justified and compelling reasons why we haven't done this and we shouldn't do this. And also the issue of, criminals are going to violate the law. Well, that's not a reason not to enact reasonable gun safety legislation or conversely not to open up the purchase of guns. I hear NRA folks all the time cite to cities like Chicago with high crime rates and gun violence rates, and they say, oh, that shows that Chicago's strict gun laws aren't working. Almost all of the surrounding states around Chicago have lax or no gun law, gun safety laws, gun background check laws, etc. Most of the guns used for crime in Chicago are purchased from three gun shops in Gary, Indiana, or even closer to Chicago. So it's the proliferation of the states that allow this stuff that puts guns in the hands of criminals. And Journal of Urban Health did a study showing that state universal background checks do significantly reduce the number of guns diverted to the illegal market.
I wanted to get one quick question in with Representative Plakin. We're talking also about this assault weapons ban. What is your feeling on assault weapons and these high, many, many round magazines clips? What do you think about this legislation?
Well, I haven't read the bill by Senator Stewart, but generally speaking, this has been tried. And we had a national ban, I think, from 1994 to 2004. And interestingly, 37% of the police agencies in the U.S. noted an increase in the amount of assault weapons. 53% of agencies said they've seen an increase in the amount of large caliber handguns. 38% of police agencies said that the weapons holding 10 or more rounds have become more noticeable. And so there's no evidence that by doing this. And here's a larger question. Senator Farmer referred to our founders and the type of weapons they anticipated. I don't think, and certainly, obviously, technology has changed a lot of things. But where we are now, and I come at it from this point, the bad guys are going to get the guns because they're bad guys. They're criminals. They violate the law. So the question is the good guys. So going back to the founders, what they're suggesting is we allow the bad guys to have the guns, the so-called assault weapons, but the good guys we're going to make criminals of that happen to own these things if they don't register and do all the things that are in these bills.
Well, having these guns around, having them legally around, continues to have them in people's, conscience and being manufactured and having more of them even available legally may put them more readily available to who you're calling the bad guys. Do you think maybe...
Well, but we're not going to solve that problem. There's 300... I heard there's more guns in the United States than there are people. Okay, so the bad guys will get these guns that one way or another. For example, in most of these bills, they list, 50 or 100 type of brands and of firearms. So all they basically have to do is modify them slightly. And most of these bans have basically are eliminating guns by the way they look is part of it. You know, they look scary, so they must be bad. And some of them functionally are the same as regular hunting rifles in a lot of ways. One shot pulls the trigger, and one round is discharged. So, you know, I don't think a problem is solved. It will be solved. And if you look at the federal ban, nothing was solved by doing that, and that's why Congress let it go after 10 years.
Well, and if I could respond to that, the repeal of sunsetting of, I believe it's the Brady Bill that Representative Plankin's referring to in 2004, I think the statistics he just indicated show, in fact, what happened when that law did not exist. We can look to Missouri, for example, when it repealed its permit-to-purchase licensing laws and private handgun sale background check law back in 2007. They saw a doubling of the trafficking of guns and violent homicides. So when those laws were in place, there was less crime. The U.S. Center for Disease Control, before it was prevented by federal legislation from researching gun violence, which frankly is outrageous, studied this and showed that rates of homicides with guns increased 25% in Missouri over that time frame, while nationally there was a 10% decline in the amount of homicides. So this whole notion that criminals are going to get guns no matter what, it isn't really fully accurate. And it's never, we're legislators. It's our job to pass laws to protect society. And then it's the executive branch's job to enforce those laws. We should never just say, well, we're not going to do a law because criminals are going to violate it. Of course, that's the definition of criminal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we've got, I think Florida right now needs some upgrading of its safety laws, but we should not go the other way.
We are kind of running low on time, so we're going to have to turn now. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we do need to turn now to another bill that's related to firearms in Florida, and that's the Stand Your Ground Law, which is being tweaked with a new measure introduced this month in the Florida House. And Sasha Cordner is a reporter with our partner station, WFSU in Tallahassee. She's on the line to tell us more about what this measure is going to mean for Florida's existing law. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Sasha?
Hi, thank you. Yeah, so maybe first off, I'll maybe give a bit of background on Stand Your Ground. So back in 2005, Florida became the first state to pass such a law. It allowed people to essentially stand their ground if they had a reasonable belief that their life was in danger and they wanted to prevent greater bodily harm or they perceived a threat, so they don't have a duty to retreat in those circumstances. And it was made more famous by Trayvon Martin, the unarmed black teenager who was killed by George Zimmerman during an altercation. Zimmerman had said he had felt threatened and he claimed self-defense but was later acquitted. So now let's talk about this bill. First off, it's Republican Representative Bob Payne who filed the bill, the House bill, on Friday. But the Senate bill was filed by Senator Rob Bradley, who has sponsored this effort in the past. And it's a measure that essentially changes the role of prosecutors during the immunity hearing for Stand Your Ground, which allows people to claim self-defense, as I said earlier. So in other words, instead of the accused having to prove their self-defense claim to avoid the trial during the pretrial hearing, the measure would shift that burden to the state attorneys.
So where does the measure on Stand Your – where is it now at this point? It's just been proposed?
Yes. Pretty much it's been proposed. It's going to come up next Tuesday for its first Senate committee hearing. But this measure, as I said, has been filed in the past, so it's died in the committee process before and also – within the Florida legislature, whether it's the Senate that's passed it, but the House, and died in the House.
Are you seeing any additional support for it this time around?
This time around, I feel like it's pretty much going to be the same people who have supported it or been against it in the past. So you'll have the National Rifle Association, or the NRA, as well as the gun rights group Florida Carry, in favor of this. The public defenders are also in favor of this, but prosecutors are definitely not in favor of this. You've also got – I don't know if she'll come back again, but maybe it's not last year, but Lucia McBath, the mother of Jordan Davis, also spoke out against this measure because she said she's against the expansion of Stand Your Ground, and her son is the Jacksonville teen who was shot to death in a dispute over loud music.
And we're also hearing reporting that says that Florida's homicide rate has spiked since the Stand Your Ground laws were enacted. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there was a new study in the Journal of the American Medical Association that shows Florida's gun homicide rates have increased dramatically under Stand Your Ground. And that is looking like it was 31%. And the study uses data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, their mortality database, which consists of county-level numbers provided by the states.
All right. Well, Sasha Cordner, I want to thank you for joining us from WFSU reporting on the Stand Your Ground proposed changes. I also want to thank Senator Linda Stewart, Senator Gary Farmer, Representative Scott Plakon, and Representative Jay Fant for joining us today for an interesting show about gun control. Very passionate on a lot of different sides there. Coming up, a Dutch environmental biologist says Florida can learn a lot about how the Netherlands deals with water. He's coming up right next.